Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And now, for your listening pleasure. Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, horrible NHL prediction bracket guy, and the author of Iceman and Maniacs. Hey, I'm in a really good shape. I just need a little bit of help from a few game sevens, and Philly's got to amp it up. But I'm not bad. I'm on target for 7 out of 8.
Yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah, I guess that's not bad.
But I do need help. I looked brilliant last week. Colorado up 3-0, San Jose up 3-0. Uh-huh. I looked really good.
And now things are getting interesting.
Yeah, now things are getting normal.
Can you say pleasure one more time?
Pleasure.
Boom, chicka, wow, wow.
There you go. Next on overtime. All right, let's get right into it. Our top story,
All
if
right.
there's no doubt.
Yeah, this is something you actually knew about before we recorded our last show, but you did a great job of keeping the secret for all 3 hours of the show.
It was longer than 3 hours.
I like that after the news broke, people were saying, now I got to re-listen to Insights to see if Derek dropped any clues.
Nope.
And they,
I'm a professional.
They asked if I was going to drop any clues, and that would have been difficult because I didn't know.
Nope.
Because you did a very good job of keeping the secret. But as announced on Good Friday, Jeff Pyle has been relieved of his duties as Iceman head coach and director of hockey operations. And in the official press release about it, Ron Geary had a very interesting quote that mentioned that Pyle was, quote, not a good fit for us, which seems to carry the implicit implication that there perhaps were differences of opinion off the ice that sealed Mr. Pyle's fate regardless of the team's on-ice performance. Is that true? Can
yep.
you shed any light on that?
I can shed a little bit of light. It head coach Jeff Pyle, he runs his system. He's the second winningest coach of all time in the ECHL. He will soon be the all-time winningest coach in the ECHL. And he runs the ship a certain way, and it's pretty tight. And that's the way it is. And it just did not work in Evansville. So it didn't matter. It had nothing to do with the season and how it ended or anything else like that. It was just wasn't working out, and the team wanted to go in a different direction.
So would it be unfair to say that Jeff Pyle has a way that he prefers to see things done, and Ron Geary has a way that he prefers to see things done, and the two did not perhaps mesh?
I guess that's the best way to put it. So I don't know. I don't want to get into any specifics or anything else like that. But like I said, Pyler wanted things done a certain way, and
they're not going to be done that way.
Exactly. So, and that's just the way it is. And I thought you had I believe it was you on the Asylum said, you realize something's not working out. It's better to change it. Even though this is the first winningest team we've had in the ECHL, only the second winning team that we've ever had, but it just wasn't going to work. So you might as well just give someone else an opportunity to do it. And Jeff Pyle, you know, he wasn't happy here either, so he'll get an opportunity to head out and find somewhere else where he'll be happy, and that's the way it is. The one thing I do want to clarify, though, is this had nothing to do with that jersey auction fiasco
gotcha.
At the end of the season. If anything, head coach Jeff Pyle was all about the players being active in the community. He said, I will do everything. I will fight for you guys. I will make sure everything is the best it can possibly be for you guys. But in return, you guys are professionals. And what professionals do is they go out into the community. So that was someone else's snafu inside the organization. It's been dealt with and everything else. But head coach Jeff Pyle had nothing to do with this whole he told the players they weren't allowed to go out. all of that stuff, and none of that had anything to do with his dismissal.
Interesting stuff. Yeah, I think it's certainly debatable as to whether or not it could have eventually worked from the outside. If you just look at the on-ice performance and how well the team started, and then obviously everything went downhill after all the injuries and call-ups, but you think we're on the right track. The potential is there to move forward and end up being a playoff team. But outside
Whoa, I didn't say that.
Well, not with, you know, with Pyle.
Oh, yeah.
You think, you know, if Pyle had stayed here,
yes,
next season,
yeah,
we could have been a playoff team.
Yes.
Right. So what I'm saying is you can make those assumptions based on what happened on the ice this season before it all went,
yes,
downhill. But if there are off-ice things in play that most of us do not know about, and Ron Geary honestly feels like it's just not going to work, then yes, I agree. It's cut ties now. There's no point in treading water for another season or two, only to end up in the same place we're in now.
Yep.
You know, whether or not getting rid of Pyle is the right move, everyone can debate. But Ron Geary is the owner, and if he believes it's the right move to let him go, then it's pointless to hold on to him for a year or two and then let him go.
Yep.
Just do it now. Move on to the next chapter.
Yep, and they put a search committee, all kinds of people interested in the job, and I've even gotten a few of those emails that I've forwarded along, and we'll go from there, and they'll bring in another head coach. And this league is interesting because it's so difficult to win here, and it really doesn't matter. Like, you got to have a great coach, there's no doubt about that, but every player, for the most part, it's on a one-year deal. So any person that comes in here, even if Pyle returned, he's pretty much going to start all over again from scratch with a whole new team. He might have kept a couple of core players, a Beaulieu, a Moon, a Krug. You would hope that an Andre Bouvet-Morissette comes back, et cetera, et cetera. But he isn't coming back with the same 18.
No.
And even Redding, who, and I'm sure we'll get into that later, but they win the Kelly Cup championship last year. They returned seven guys. That's the way this league works.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like the NHL where you can have a core of three full lines and just tinker with parts from season to season. It's totally different at this level.
No, and I don't think you need to have a coach for 7 years that's implementing his system and everything else. If you have one that you like and that works out, that's great. But a new coach is going to bring in all new contacts and new players and everything else, and it's not going to be that far behind from what Pyle did the year before with Crom, which Crom did the year before.
Right.
It's all new every year at the ECHL level.
Yeah, there's so much player turnover that the whole idea of implementing a system and building with guys in a system, you know, the system can be the same under the same coach, but there's so much turnover on the player front that consistency just really, it's not the same at this level as it is. Even in the AHL, there's,
yep,
less turnover there than there is here. But there's more turnover there than there is in the NHL. It's just how it is. The lower you are on the food chain, the more turnover there's going to be, and really the less of an impact I think it has if you do have kind of a coaching carousel going on. Now, obviously, you would like to find a guy that is successful and stick with him, but
well,
it's
even
not
at this
the end
level
of the world.
Right, and even at this level, you have a coach that's successful for a couple of years, a good chance he's going to get plucked,
yeah,
and get moved up to the AHL or to the NHL as an assistant or something like that. So that really doesn't make a big deal either. So
yeah.
I don't think it's not an emergency or anything else that we're searching for our third coach, and we'll have a third different coach in 3 years in the ECHL. It's
right.
Really not that big of a
well,
deal.
Well, and I think people look at the aggregate of the history of this team and say, well, this is going to be, what, our fifth coach? Yeah, fifth coach. This will be our fifth coach in seven seasons. But, there, you know, when we keep changing leagues, that's just going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, John Reichert, great guy, but he was in over his head our first season. There was a reason why he was replaced.
Yep.
Jack Collins was a great coach, led us to a championship in our second season. But then we move it up to the CHL, and Jack Collins is not a CHL coach.
Nope.
And then Crom was here for 3 years.
Yep.
And then Pyle was here for one. And like we said, if it's not going to work, then it's time to move on.
And so, even Gary said, you know, with Crom, it's like, yeah, he was here for 3 years, and I finished in last place twice. So
yeah.
that was the reason that he decided to move in a new direction.
Yeah. And you know, it's one thing.
And look at him. And we both went on the air last May after Crom got fired and said we would have given him an extra year or whatever. But did Crom change anything? Did this firing make him a great coach? Because he's doing wonders out in Stockton
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, exactly.
And part of that has to do with that he got a lot of help from the affiliate right at the end of the season. So,
right.
You know, all of a sudden he looks brilliant.
That's
and,
life in the ECHL. Yep,
and I would work for Jeff Pyle in a heartbeat. Anywhere he goes, if he wanted me, I would work with him in a heartbeat. Same is true with Rich Crom.
Yeah.
Same is true with Jack Collins, more than
yeah.
likely.
These are guys that when you know them and you work with them in any respect, they're the type of guys that you would like to see them stick around. But at the same time, when you understand what's going on and look at the bigger picture, you can understand moving on as well. It's not a black or white issue. It's not a 100% this is the right move or this is the wrong move. It could go either way. And you make a decision and you move forward and you hope that you made the right decision. But, you know, I think we look at it and see that the team improved this year and we got our second winning season ever. And there was a lot of progress made, and especially with the way it started. But then ultimately we did not make the playoffs. And I think if you want to look at it from the on-ice perspective, it's kind of silly to look at a team that has missed the playoffs in back-to-back seasons and be content with that. You know, even though there was the improvement, you know, in most markets, if you miss the playoffs in back-to-back years, people are going to be calling for the coach's head.
Yep.
And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to cut your coach every time that happens, but it's not like it's this way out there move. I mean, there's teams that make the playoffs and get to the second round, and that's considered a disappointment, and they fire their coach. We didn't make the playoffs. And like Pyle said, ultimately, you know, you're supposed to win hockey games, and yep. we didn't win enough of them. And we've talked about that elsewhere. You know, Barry Trotz said that when Nashville decided to cut ties with him. I'm here to win hockey games. We didn't do it the last 2 years. We didn't make the playoffs. And, you know, I understand. That's what it is. That's the name of the game in this business. If you don't win enough, your job security is little to zero.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
So Geary has said that the coaching search is underway. There is a search committee in place that has been meeting. Over 20 applicants have already shown interest in the position, and he wants to make a hire by June 1st. Do you know who's on the search committee?
Nope. I know I
not
am not.
You. Gotcha.
And I would assume the owner is. After that, I have no idea.
Gotcha. So what do you think as far as candidates? There's been a lot of names bandied about. A lot of people have mentioned Al Sims, the former Comets coach. A lot of people have mentioned Colin Chalk, the former Comets captain.
I thought about Colin Chalk, too, because he is assistant up in
Kalamazoo. Right. Could go with someone who has ECHL experience, maybe a Nick Vitucci, who was Toledo's coach. Or it could go with someone maybe a little younger looking to move up the ladder, a successful coach in the CHL or the SPHL, which doesn't always work at this level because it's a different game with all the affiliations and whatnot. But sometimes a good coach is a good coach. And guys, that's how guys move up, is you start at the low level and you win games, and sooner or later somebody gives you a chance. And either you prove yourself at the next level or you don't. But what do you think as far as maybe not necessarily a name other than an Al Sims or a Colin Chalk, but which direction do you think Geary will go? Someone like a Pyle? You know, my thinking is Pyle was that veteran ECHL guy with loads of experience, and that didn't work out. So maybe he'll go the opposite way and go for a younger coach in the CHL or the SPHL who maybe doesn't have the experience but is perhaps trending more upward.
I have no idea. And I'm not saying it isn't a great question, but I don't know what Ron will do. Myself, I would probably go with the experienced guy, maybe a little, obviously younger, less experience, but
which is pretty much everyone who's ever coached in the ECHL
compared to Pyle,
right.
Yeah, but I would definitely have someone that has had head coaching experience at the ECHL or CHL level for a good solid 5 years. That's what I would bring in.
What do you think about the wild card that some fans have suggested on Facebook of Josh Beaulieu retiring as a player and becoming the coach of the Iceman?
I think Bo does want to get into coaching. I'm not sure he wants to jump right into the ECHL. So, not right
now. Nor
right,
right now.
No, I mean, you look at a Jordan Little, who's been down in the SP for a year. He'd be someone I would look at in a couple of years from now.
Yeah.
But I think that's the proper route, is to go down to the SPHL and
right.
and learn. I mean, you're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And so you make your mistakes early, and then you learn, and you develop a system, and then you move up.
Well, and retiring as a player and then coaching the team you just retired from would be very awkward.
Yeah.
It would be very difficult. I don't care how strong of a personality you are, how great of a leader you are. As I posted on the Asylum, being the team captain is a leadership position, but you are ultimately the liaison between the players and the coach. And being the coach is a completely different leadership role.
Yep.
And not saying that a guy like Beaulieu couldn't be in that role, but going from coach or from player to coach with the same team in one off season would be a very tall order. So you know, that was the suggestion last year. Everybody wanted Colin Chalk to become the coach in Fort Wayne. And you know, the Comets got just railed by the fans because they didn't hire him, and now he's in Kalamazoo, which is a traditional rival, which does make it hurt a little more. But you know, he's an assistant coach in Kalamazoo. He's not a head coach. And I think I understand not wanting to go down that road.
Yep.
Because it's a really slippery slope. You could catch lightning in a bottle and it could work great, but there's also a very good chance that it turns into a total train wreck.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a Kentucky family reunion. It's just too much inbreeding right there, so... In my opinion.
The thoughts of Derek Benigni do not necessarily reflect everyone else here on Iceman Insights. You can direct your complaints to...
Yes, nor do they represent Youth Incorporated or the Wired Coffee House.
Yeah.
96.9 FM.
So where do you think Pyle will land? There's been a lot of talk that he could go to Indy with the Fuel. The Toledo Walleye are looking for a coach. He could go back to Europe. Any ideas where he'll
yes,
end up?
I agree with all
yes.
of those.
All of those are viable
yes,
candidates.
I think all those are viable candidates. He's got so many connections. He can go pretty much wherever he wants to go if he gets the job offer. And I think there'll still be, you know, let's wait and see what's Vegas going to do. What's Elmira going to do? Are they standing pat in around the league? So
yeah.
There may be other job openings opening
yeah.
up too.
Teams that didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, or got ousted in the first
right.
round. There might be some more opportunities, especially when all of a sudden a Jeff Pyle becomes available. All of a sudden
right.
other teams may jump in on
well
that.
And who moves up, like you said, coaches moving up.
Yep.
If a team gets to the finals and their coach impresses and ends up getting a job in the AHL, then that's a nice job that would be open. So yeah, there's a lot of moving parts still, a lot of variables still in place, so we'll see. I do think a lot like Barry Trotz that we talked about last show, Jeff Pyle will be unemployed only as long as he wishes to be. He will have offers at this level or similar, and he'll be behind somebody's bench next season.
One thing, I actually talked to Coach today, and Peter Horacek got fired down in Florida, and they played together.
Panthers, not Everblades.
Yes, and and they played together, and I said, my hope is both of you guys get picked up by Toronto. So that I would root for you guys at a heartbeat, so that would be... cool.
So one final thing on the Pyle front, wanted to mention for anyone who questions the type of guy he is, the day that Pyle was officially publicly released on Good Friday, he called Dixie that afternoon just to thank her and the Booster Club for all of the support and work this season. So I thought that was a really cool gesture. You know, he had absolutely no obligation to do that. He could have just cut his ties and move on. But I thought it was really cool to call her and make a point of thanking the Booster Club for the efforts throughout the season. So,
that is the one thing that gets interesting is, like I said, I don't mind him getting fired and moving on. The owner wants to go in a different direction and turnover's the name of the game here in the ECHL. But that's the interesting thing is for people in the Booster Club and the radio guy and for the players themselves, if the next coach comes in and he doesn't have the same community outreach program that he expects out of his players, all of a sudden things get difficult. All
mm-hmm.
of a sudden Iceman Live becomes a much more difficult show when I'm not allowed to get four players for it every game, you know, and same with the Booster Club is had Jeff Pyle wanted, he met Dixie and said, yeah, we've got things that you could help us with. That would be great. Whenever it was, August, September, blah, blah, blah. He gave me, I said, I wanted to pump it on the Iceman Live show. He said, that's great. That's what we're trying to do. We're all moving in this direction. And I think the Booster Club went from 45 people to 125.
Yeah, there was big growth.
Yeah, and it worked great because the the team administration and the booster club were all going in the same direction.
Right.
So will the next coach bring that? We will see.
We'll find out. Yeah. We got to break another one in, so we'll find out what happens.
And I know I'll tell a story out of school here. Stop me if I mentioned it in overtime or not. One of the first things that Pyle did was he locked everyone out of the locker room.
Yeah, we've talked about that.
And that
way
wrinkled,
back when.
Okay, that ruffled a lot of feathers. The players absolutely loved it. And what I meant by that is if you weren't a player and if you weren't specifically working on a hockey operations-related task at the time, you were not allowed in the locker room. Because in the past, it was just people coming in
doors
and out
were open
and everything
and
else. Yeah.
It was Grand Central Station in
and
there.
And that was part of, he told the players, you know, this is for you guys. I don't care, but this is for you guys so you guys can come in, have your place, relax, stretch out, do your things. But to pay for that, you know, the flip side of that is you guys have to go out into the community and be with these fans. That's what you have to do. And so we will see how that also plays out because that, that ruffled all kinds of feathers from all over this town. So, but and that's the kind of example of why he isn't working here anymore because that was his method. That was the way it was done. I got kicked out of that locker room 3 times during training camp.
and you learned your lesson.
And I learned my lesson, and I learned not to go in there unless I had work to do. And that's a pretty easy thing because it's pretty easy to find work to do.
Yeah.
And if you don't have work to do, you don't need to be in there when you're just a radio guy just
hanging out.
Shooting a chat with the players.
Can you say that?
Chat? Yeah.
Past tense of what?
Shooting.
Ah, sure. So in other news, another departure. Your buddy, your partner in crime, Ian Frazier. No longer the manager of digital and social media. He's done with college and now seeking a full-time, year-round job. His Iceman gig was a seasonal, in-season job only, and he's now graduated. He's looking for a full-time, 365-day-a-year job. So,
my baby has grown up.
All 98 pounds of him.
Yes.
So, Ian, good kid, and best of luck to him and his future endeavors. I hope that whatever gig he finds suits him well, and I know he's already sniffing around trying to find a job at a higher level. He's talking to some people in other professional sports operations that are higher than AA, and hopefully he finds something and latches on, and I'm sure whatever he does, he'll do a fantastic job.
Not sure how good the website's going to be next year.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Yep. And no, that's not a hint. I don't know anything about it either. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. There's a lot of variables in play here. So time will tell. Also wanted to mention I did a season recap story on IcemanManiacs.com last week. It was also on ProHockeyNews.com. For starters, I broke down some of the stats before and after the January 29th meltdown, and the meltdown was very obvious in the stats. Our winning percentage went from 658 to 338.
Yeah, because at that time, I was mentioning in the pregame show that we were in second place in the conference, but we had a better winning percentage.
Yeah.
I mean, there was times we had the best winning percentage in the entire ECHL.
Yeah. So winning percentage went from 658 to 338. Winning percentage in one-goal games went from 700 to 417. That's a big drop. Our average goal differential went from plus 0.45 to minus 0.73. That's a large swing.
Yeah.
And we went from scoring first in 63% of games to scoring first in 35% of games. Our shooting percentage dropped from 10.93% to 9.63%. And that's a stat you don't see a whole lot is shooting percentage, but to put that in perspective, on the flip side, that means that our opponent's save percentage, which is a more familiar stat, went up from 891 to 904. That's a pretty substantial gain.
Especially at this level. You hit that 904. Obviously, you want to be in the 920s and 930s. Those are the exceptional goaltenders. Mm-hmm. But
the ones that don't stay at this level for long.
Right. But that 904, you can win games with that. Once you start hitting that 800 range, you're having a hard time winning games.
And case in point, Mike Clemente's save percentage before January 29th was 914, which is very solid. And afterward, it was 898. Bartis also dropped from 906 to 898. So on both ends, you're giving up more and you're scoring less, which is not generally a good combination. No. And then the final one that I thought was worth mentioning was the man games lost to injury and illness. Before January 29th, we were averaging 2.55 man games lost per game. And afterward, it jumped to 4.91. So more or less double the injuries over the second half of the season, yep. More or less. And that makes a big difference. Some other interesting stats from the entire season. The penalty kill finished last in the league, but the power play finished first at 20.6%. That made the Icemen the first ECHL team with the top power play in the league to miss the playoffs since 2004-2005 when Augusta did it.
Woohoo!
Yeah!
We got a stat.
Yeah, it's a record.
Yep.
A dubious one. We did score six or more goals 11 different times, but as we talked about over and over again, we won with defense. The Icemen were 28-8-5 when allowing three or fewer goals, but just 3-22-6 when allowing more than three. And the biggest problem there is we gave up more than three goals 31 times.
Yeah.
That's a lot of games to give up four goals or more, and generally not a winning recipe. A couple other things. This team had trouble starting and finishing periods. You know, coaches, one of the old adages in hockey is you want to start every period strong and you want to end every period strong. You don't want to give up a goal early and you don't want to give up a goal in the last minute or two. And we did that a lot. Excluding overtime and empty net goals, we gave up 23 goals in the first 2 minutes of a period and 19 more in the last 2 minutes of a period.
And it seemed like it was all in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it happened more down the stretch, but it happened a fair amount even early in the season. We also had momentum problems. We would score a goal and then give it right back. 14 times we gave up a goal within 2 minutes of having scored one.
Pyle would always say, I can't believe how hard we work for a goal just to turn around and make it as easy as possible for them to score on us.
Give it back, yeah. And then also we had a problem with things snowballing in the wrong direction and giving up back-to-back goals. 21 times we gave up back-to-back goals in less than 2 minute span. That's tough. You know, yep. You're going to give up goals. It happens to even the best of teams. But when you give one up, you need to make sure you only give one up. When it turns into crooked numbers, you're having trouble. And then a few other random stats. We lost eight times after we led by two goals or more in a game. Four in regulation, four in overtime. We took 18 delay of game penalties. I went back and counted, and it seemed like that happened a lot.
Yeah,
and it happened a lot.
It sure did.
18 is a lot over a 72-game season. We did only give up 7 too-many-men-on-the-ice penalties, which that was a huge problem last year. I think we were up around 20 of those last year, but only 7 this year is actually not that bad over the course of a season. And then our 7 shootout losses was the most in the ECHL. One final stat. And this was not in my season recap story. I tallied it just for you. We were 5-1-2 with the man crush Matty Spaeth as one of our linesmen.
I told you that when he comes to town, we win hockey games.
He's good luck.
Yep.
We need to figure something out to get him here more often
exactly.
Next year.
Exactly.
Even if he's not lining, maybe just bring him to town and sit him in the stands.
We'll have to check out and see if that works.
Yeah.
That's an easy test to do.
He could be our
first
secondary mascot.
Yeah, first 3-3 that he doesn't work, we'll bring him into town for a whole weekend and see
and then
we'll
do
the show and see our 2-1. Yep.
Maybe we should make him the coach if he's that good of luck. A couple things, a follow-up from our last show. I just wanted to clarify, because he clarified, Rick Llewellyn's Jumbotron Photoshop masterpiece from a little while back was indeed pitchforks, not sporks.
Could have been better. That's all I was saying. Could have been better, Rick.
And another follow-up from last show. I have to ask, did you get any prize requests from folks who actually listened to all 3 hours of our
multiple
episode? Did you really?
Yes. One of the best was someone emailed me, and I can't think of the name right off the top of my head, that said it took them 4 days and 15 beers, but they finally made it all the way through. However, I did award the prize to your wife, Amanda, who listened to all three plus hours.
Uh-huh.
And I gave her, I think she got a weekend away from Evan, and you are changing diapers for 1 month. Congratulations.
Yep. That's it?
What?
There's only one prize?
Yeah.
What about everyone else?
Well,
they don't get a prize?
They got to listen for 3.5 hours.
Do I have to change their diapers for a month,
too? I didn't say I was giving everyone a prize. I just said I was giving one. I said, if anyone is listening at this point, if you get a hold of me, you will get a prize.
But
anyone.
Anyone.
Yes.
But see, she's married to me, and I'm on the show. I think that makes her ineligible. So I'm nullifying her prize, and you have to give it to someone else.
No. So, I don't know. I'll have to look. I was getting texts and everything else, but I only got about six. So, that actually made it all the way through that monstrosity. ECHL playoffs, speaking of monstrosities, we're already at the 30-minute mark.
All right. As we record this, there are still two series ongoing in the Eastern Conference. The Cyclones lead Orlando 3-2, and the Greenville Road Warriors lead Kalamazoo 3-2.
Unbelievable about Cincy. They're up 3-0. Orlando comes up to Cincinnati and steals
and
two on the road.
Making
and now
a series
back,
of it.
Yep, now they're back to the O.
But it's still possible that we could have a the whole Eastern Conference could be all four upsets because both of those, Cincinnati and Greenville, are the lower seeds in those series. And there are two upsets already completed. The number 8 Fort Wayne Comets ousted the top-seeded Reading Royals in five games.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. They got it all going all at the same time. And I had Justin Cohn on from the Journal-Gazette in our last game up there on that Friday night. And he had mentioned that the Comets hadn't missed the playoffs in back-to-back years since 74-75. That's how storied that franchise is. And, you know, here we are complaining about our fifth coach in 7 years. That's 30 years since they have missed the playoffs back-to-back, and they got into it, and they stung Reading. And I guess it got really nasty on Sunday afternoon in the pregame warm-up.
Fights.
Yeah, there was some scuffling and everything else, and the GM of the Comets had to go out on the ice to separate the players.
Wow.
So, yeah, pretty crazy. But now all of a sudden they're just – they're playing good hockey, and Don Breck is so excited he rejoined the asylum. It's like, wow, it's a golden day.
You know, when
you need to do the season stats on when Soupy posted the Fort Wayne dumpster fire pick, see what their record is since
after
then.
After that, yeah. You know, we said it when the Icemen were still alive mathematically that if you get in, anything can happen.
Yep.
You know, you can be the 8 seed, and you can have a hit or miss season where you even back in. But if you get hot once the playoffs start, you know, it's a whole new season. The regular season records don't mean anything, and right now the Comets are proving that. In the other series in the East, the 6 seed Wheeling Nailers swept the South Carolina Stingrays, sans Jeff Jachytis, who was out due to injury, and clearly they missed him.
In part,
but they didn't score goals either, which is
kind of important. I don't think it would have made it. I think the biggest thing they missed was Joe Lavin got injured in game one.
Did he?
Yeah, and so he didn't play the rest of the series. They don't have, other than Luka Vidmar, they don't really have a puck-moving defenseman, and they just really just kind of looked ordinary. And then I went to Wheeling, and I did game four. Mm-hmm. So they had already given up. York battled. He played awesome. And then the team was just flat.
They
were already on
the golf
course.
They were down 3-0. They knew it was over.
They were already on the golf course to the point where he got barraged for about 2.5 minutes straight and just made ridiculous save after ridiculous save and then was screaming at his teammates after the puck got sent back down the ice because they were just all kind of standing around. So.
Wow.
And then just, you know, typical Alan York fashion, he's battling, keeping this team in the game. And then a guy takes the puck into the corner, shoots it from behind the net. It's a flex off of a stick. It hits him in the back of the shoulder, rolls down his back and into the net. And it's just like, you know, I'm sure all the boo birds in Evansville said, oh, yeah, exactly. That's
Alan York for you.
But I did get to see him after the game, so that was pretty cool.
So how'd your trip go? You only got to do one game.
Yeah,
there was no game five.
Yeah, there was no game five, but that area, that Ogle Bay Inn in Wheeling, West Virginia, has so much to do. We didn't even do half of it while we were there, and that was getting the Saturday night off. But
how long were you there?
We got in Friday afternoon, and we stayed till Sunday. and cool. then headed back. But DJ Absalah from the Nailers is just a great guy. We had a lot of fun. And then even Joey Z from South Carolina, I joked with him a little bit too. And I love that old nasty barn in Wheeling. I understand why the players hate it because the stalls are like this big, but by this big I mean about 8 inches wide. It is not made for professional sports anymore, but it's got a great atmosphere. It's got a great location and had a lot of fun. So,
cool.
And Rebecca said that they had a lot of fun and they were rooting for the Nailers, but Ivy said she was pretending to root for the Nailers and she was really rooting for South Carolina because she was rooting for Alan York.
Wow. So she's the one fan he has left in Evansville.
Yeah, exactly. Me and her. And Luke Oakley as well, who played in that game too.
Yeah, that's true. So out west, the top-seeded Alaska Aces took care of business. They swept the Las Vegas Wranglers, not really surprisingly. We both thought Vegas might manage to win one game, but that didn't happen.
Nope.
Bakersfield, the sixth seed, upset number 3 Utah in 5 games. And Rich Crum and Jeremy Langlois and the 7th-seeded Stockton Thunder swept the number 2-seed Ontario Reign. That's the series where Stockton got to host the first 2 games because of Ontario's building problems.
Yep, and we've learned that from our own end, what happens when you give up home ice advantage to start the series.
Yeah,
it usually comes back to bite you in the bootay.
Yeah, they gave it up, and they never got the momentum, and it was all Stockton.
Well, it was all Jeremy Langlois. Holy moly.
He's pretty good.
Yep.
And I posted on the Asylum. Can you imagine? Crom's got to be thanking the hockey gods for having him fall in his lap right at the end of the season.
Yeah, I kind of joked with Ron Gary about it. He didn't think it was that funny.
Yeah, I can see. And then in the 4-5 matchup out west, Idaho, the 4-seed, beat Colorado in 6 games. The deciding game in that series was the longest in ECHL history. Idaho scored the game winner with 2 minutes and 42 seconds left in the 4th overtime with 77 minutes and 18 seconds of OT having been played. It was the 8th longest pro hockey game ever in North America. Only 6 NHL games and 1 AHL game has been longer. So not only was it the longest in the ECHL ever, but it's the 8th longest pro game on record that is known.
And that was right on the heels of the Greenville-Kalamazoo game on Saturday night. Greenville went up 3-2. That one went into overtime. They scored 2 goals late in the 3rd period to force overtime, and they went into triple overtime before that one was settled.
A lot of overtime being played here. Idaho goalie Josh Robinson actually tied the league record with 83 saves in that game. That's a lot of rubber.
Yeah, that's...
You ever had that much rubber fly at you?
No, but that just... His save percentage is set for the rest of the playoffs.
Yeah, no kidding. Now the fun thing about that was Game 6, and it was Monday night. And if Colorado had won that game, Game 7 would have been the next night, Tuesday night. Can you imagine if Colorado had managed to win that after 4 overtimes?
Yeah.
That would have been the most lethargic Game 7 in the history of hockey.
Well, and that's part of the reason why the ECHL now has a rule that. The playoffs can't start until 3 games after the regular season has ended because there were teams that would set up, like, I don't know who, but for example, Florida would say, well, we're in the playoffs. Our playoffs start on Tuesday, and the 2 teams that were playing for last place to play Florida are playing Sunday afternoon somewhere.
Right. And then they got to turn around and travel.
Yes, and then they've got nowhere to go. They got to go from hotel to hotel, or they got to travel and miss practice time and travel right on the day of the game. So the league had to change the rule and mandate a 3-day break.
Interesting.
Yep.
And finally, one thing on the playoffs, a correction from our last show. We both said that we thought that the ECHL reseeds the remaining teams in the 2nd round. Turns out...
That was incorrect.
That was incorrect.
Yep.
The ECHL, like the NHL now, and like the AHL, uses set brackets. And the West now illustrates that this season. The 2nd round will be Alaska against Idaho, which is a 1-4 matchup. And Bakersfield and Stockton, which is a 6-7 matchup.
Yep.
And it's sticking to the brackets, so... because of that, the top 2 teams left play each other, and the bottom 2 teams play each other, which is kind of odd.
So, yep, indeed. That's just the way they do it, and it'll be fun.
Yeah.
And chances are that I will be out in Wheeling for the 2nd round.
Really?
Yep. I'll probably go out there one more time.
Cool.
Shockers, hockey rock song of the week.
All right, this Sunday, May the 4th, is Star Wars Day.
That's right. May the 4th be with you.
Indeed. This is a song I often played at Swander long before we ever did Star Wars Night promotions. It's composed by one John Williams, and it was originally from The Empire Strikes Back. This is Darth Vader's theme, The Imperial March.
Over? Nothing is over until we decide it is.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
Woohoo! Are you ready?
Yes!
I said, are you ready?
Jason Dale!
Daddy's too hot.
I like peni.
That's what she said.
Hump. I love BJ's Fur Circus. Steven Ricker's testicles. D-buddy. No touchy place.
Beer.
Broken penis. Vitellary Filippula. Filippuli. Filippalapala.
Use your big boy words.
La 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 la.
Who's the brains in this outfit? My point exactly.
That was totally wicked!
Now Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley.
And Daddy.
And we're back live in the studios of the Wired Cafe.
Cafe?
111 Northwest 4th Street.
It's now a cafe?
No.
That sounds kind of cool, though.
It did, but that's an actual lie. But we are live in the studios of Wired, 96.9 FM, Shocker, Benigni, Iceman Insights. Shocker, Dirty D, Iceman Insights, 96.9, The Wired.
This next segment's yours.
Let's talk about the birds and the BJs.
Let's.
And the BJs, what, I got a story to tell about that one, but not about BJs, but the BJs.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
You talked a lot about BJs last show. For those who sat through all three
I don't
hours.
Even remember last show. That was so darn long.
That's what she said. So we'll start with the Springfield Falcons, our AHL affiliates. They are facing the Providence Bruins, a.k.a. the P-Bruins, in the best-of-five first round in the playoffs. They are up 2-1. Game four is actually happening right now as we record this
and
live.
They're losing. Yes.
Yeah, and they're losing. So
on a Wednesday afternoon.
In all likelihood, it's going to be Game 5, which I believe is Saturday in Springfield. And then in the NHL, the Columbus Blue Jackets fell to the Pittsburgh Penguins in 6 games. It was a close series. If you disregard the Pittsburgh empty netter at the end of Game 5, all 6 games were one-goal games.
I got the big fail last night because Pittsburgh was up 4-0. And it was the third period, and they were on the power play, and I said, enough of this. I'm done. I haven't seen Colorado all year, so I'm going to flip over to that game. Mm-hmm. And then Columbus explodes
and
for 3 goals for 5 minutes, and I didn't even know about it till after the end of the night.
So in the series, Marc-Andre Fleury and Sergei Bobrovsky both had identical save percentages of .908, and I think the difference in that is Pittsburgh has the offensive talent to win despite that, and Columbus probably needed more than that. I think if you had just gone into that series and said Fleury and Bob are going to end up with identical save percentages, you'd say, all right, Pittsburgh wins. I think the Blue Jackets needed Bob to be stellar, or at least very, very good, and 908 is not very, very good. It's okay, but they needed more than okay.
I think the Blue Jackets are really interesting because you get knocked out in the first round, and some people may want to panic. Oh, we need to change this team, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. I would not do a thing to this team.
No, let it keep going.
Yeah,
They're one of the youngest teams that made the playoffs. You get Nathan Horton back.
Nathan Horton's probably the difference. He could have toppled Pittsburgh if he's in the lineup and he's healthy. And he's under contract for the next 6 years.
Yeah.
So you got a bunch of other kids, too. So you just let this team develop. There's no reason to panic or anything else, and they're right there. And another season, they'll be right there in playoff contention once again.
Yeah, they didn't win the series, but they did get their first and second playoff victories in franchise history. And in the first victory in franchise history, it was scored, it was won in overtime. And the overtime game winner was scored by none other than Matt Calvert, who, and here's a callback to about 14 episodes ago, the cruiserweight champion of the NHL. Do you remember that?
No.
Because he fought some other guy that's a little tiny, and I called him that.
Ah.
It kind of became a running gag for a while back when we were doing shows on a regular basis, and then we took a long hiatus.
Yeah.
And your Etch-A-Sketch brain forgot about it.
Instead of doing weekly shows, we do one show that's 4.5 hours long.
Exactly. That's our Birds and the BJs report, which brings us to
NHL playoff update.
In addition to the Penguins Blue Jackets series, in the East, the Montreal Canadiens swept the Tampa Bay Bolts without Ben Bishop.
Predicted that.
Yep. Boston beat Detroit in 5.
Detroit really needed that overtime game, Game 4 in Detroit.
Could have been a different series.
They win that, but they just. Detroit's the opposite. Detroit has, you know, Nyquist and Tatar breakout this year, and you're always set with Datsyuk and Zetterberg, but they got to figure out something on defense, and they've got to, you know, it's time for Bertuzzi and Cleary to go. They've got Abdelkader on that first line, and I'm a huge Justin Abdelkader fan,
but he is
not a first line right winger. He's the grind line. Put him and Helm on a line together on that third line, shut down. They're set, but when I saw that he was playing on the first line, I'm like, ooh, this could be not good.
Yeah.
So, and Boston, I think, has pushed the right buttons. They made that trade for Louis Erickson. They put the incentive-laden contract to Jerome Iginla.
It worked out pretty well.
Yeah. Doesn't that one look good? So,
In the final Eastern Series, the New York Rangers lead the Philadelphia Flyers 3-2, but they're playing Game 6 right now as we record this live.
Yep, and I've predicted Philly, so hopefully they can pull it out.
You're hoping for Game 7, and they managed to win at MSG, which so far is not looking like a particularly promising potential, but who knows?
Yep.
Game 7, anything can happen. Out west, the Anaheim Ducks beat Dallas in 6.
Predicted that.
The Sharks and Kings are tied at 3 apiece with Game 7 on Wednesday night tonight, as folks are listening to this.
I looked brilliant last week when San Jose was up 3-0.
Yeah, and then the Kings came back, and they're trying to become one of those rarities that wins a series after trailing 3-0, and they have all the momentum. But that is that game is in San Jose, so who knows? We'll see what happens.
We'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And then Colorado and Minnesota also tied at 3 apiece with Game 7 on Wednesday. And for those who haven't been watching that, the takeaway from that series, even if Minnesota manages to win, Nathan MacKinnon is really good.
He is good. 6 games now, 2 goals, 8 assists. The one thing to watch, though, is, yeah, he's good, but all of those points have come on home ice.
And, he's got to learn to play on the road.
And when a home team gets to line change against you, it's a different hockey game.
Right.
And so, yeah, he's fantastic. He's going to be a great kid. He's a rookie this year.
All of 18 years old.
But don't look at those 10 points and be like, wow, this guy's amazing. So
he's amazing at home.
Yeah, he's amazing against when he gets the line combinations that Wah wants.
Right.
And I think a huge thing about that is what happened with Chicago and St. Louis. St. Louis looked like Worldbird those first 2 games because they were able to set that lineup to stop Toews and Kane and Hossa and everything else. And they shut them down, and they put the game in their own hands, and they scored goals. And then once it switched back to Chicago, everything kind of switched back to normal, and you saw the Stanley Cup champions really come out and take it to them.
Yeah, both teams are very deep, but the best on the Blackhawks lineup is better than the best on the Blues lineup. And they got better goaltending. For all of his faults, perhaps many of them only in the past at this point, Corey Crawford was very good.
Yep.
And Ryan Miller was not. And, you know, when you're talking about two teams that are that evenly matched, where 4 out of 6 games go to overtime and another one was essentially a 1-goal game if you throw out an empty netter, goaltending can be a big swing. And when one guy's making the big saves and the other one's not, and the other one's giving up those soft goals here and there, that's a huge difference. And I picked the Blackhawks in 6. I was hoping I would be wrong, but I'm not surprised at the outcome, even with the Blues having won the first 2 games, because I figured they were going to have to win. If they were going to go 6, they'd have to win 2 of them at home, because I didn't see them winning on the road with the matchups being the way they were. And sure enough, that's what happened.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I am really offended by Chicago Blackhawks fans in this area that I know, specifically Johnny Kells. I don't understand. People make fun of me. I'm a huge Leaf fan. I am a proud Leaf fan. Well, I'm a Leaf fan.
You're as proud as you can be.
But, and, you know, I have fun. I get frustrated. But I'm a fan, and they're my team, and I root for them. And I don't understand how you can be a Blackhawk fan, and these guys have won 2 Stanley Cups in the past 4 years. And not only can you not root for them, but you flat out disrespect them and don't even – I've never seen so many people jump off a bandwagon faster than when St. Louis won those 2 games. And that second game they won, if it wasn't for Brent Seabrook taking one of the worst, easiest penalties to call in the history of the NHL, they would have won that one.
Yeah.
It was because they gave them that 5-minute power play that they were able to score with 6 seconds.
And then they get into overtime. And
I'm looking at this, and I'm just frustrated. The 3 Blackhawk fans in this town that actually thought that they could win was me, you, and Ryan Huff.
You mean Blues fans?
No, I mean Blackhawks fans, because we all predicted that Chicago would win.
Well, we're not fans. We just predicted it.
But at least at least we looked at this team and said, they're a tough team. We think that they're going to win it.
Yeah.
The own Blackhawks fans didn't even think they were going to win it. I even texted Johnny Kells after the Game 5 overtime victory on Friday
night. When they're up 3-2 going back
home. When they're up 3-2. And I said, do you believe? And he texted back and said, St. Louis in 7.
Wow, really?
Really?
Man. And that's the weird thing is, he's not a bandwagon fan, as in, you know, a lot of Blackhawks fans are fans who couldn't name a Blackhawk pre-Kane Taves era. But he's been a Blackhawks fan for a long time. And he's jumping off the bandwagon when they lose games.
They're jumping off the bandwagon when they win games. I don't get it. And then he sends me a text that he's getting his goalie helmet painted. And I guess the color scheme is jumping off the bandwagon black and turncoat red. So
wait a minute. Johnny Kells is a goaltender.
Yes.
And what do we say about goaltenders?
It doesn't matter. All the rest of the Blackhawks fans were freaking out all over this town, too. So
it's not just him.
What I thought was really weird was, I can't remember if it was Michelle Schuler or someone else that posted in the Asylum about games 1-5.
Of the Blues from last year to this year?
And it was all like the exact box line. Yeah.
And it was, they were legit. That was confirmed. Like, the AP picked up on that story that it was... Every one of those little comparisons was the same way, you know, Petrangelo scoring with, and like some of them were really weird. Like in game, I think it was in game 5, the thing was that Petrangelo scored his first goal of the playoffs. Well, one of those sources that I saw went even more, that it was, not only was it Petrangelo's first score goal of the playoffs, but it was assisted by Jaden Schwartz.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a very bizarre thing, but the comparisons went by the wayside in Game 6 because last year the Blues lost a close Game 6, and this year, well, it's close for 40 minutes, and then the third period happened, and that was that. So as a Blues fan, I'm disappointed with how it happened, but it's pretty much what I expected going in.
Now, the question I have for you is, because I don't see the Blues a lot, Columbus, I say, don't panic, everything is fine, status quo, just get a healthy Nathan Horton and keep coming back. The Red Wings, the other side. You keep the core, Nyquist, Zetterberg, Datsyuk, and Tater. And then you add, you know, no more Alfredson, no more Bertuzzi.
Get rid
no
of the old
Dan
guys.
Cleary.
Yeah.
I understand they don't want to get rid of Johan Franz, and they're not going to buy him out, but he's going to see fourth line minutes next year. So they're going to bring in a whole bunch of new people.
Yeah.
What do you do with the Blues? Because I have no idea.
See, the thing is, I think part of it depends on what they do with the coach, and it sounds like they're going to keep Ken Hitchcock. And if they're keeping Hitchcock, then I think you stick with most of the same cast, you know, build around the same core. Some people are talking about, oh, well, it's Backes and Oshie aren't going to lead them to anything. It's time to get rid of them and move on. I don't think that's the right way to go. I think most of your top line guys, your Backes, your Oshie, Jaden Schwartz, Tarasenko is one heck of a player, Alex Steen, those are the kind of guys you keep. I think most of the defense is fine with Petrangelo, Shattenkirk, Bomeister. That's a heck of a top three defenseman. I love the third grinding pairing of Roman Pulak and Barrett Jackman, who will just beat the bejesus out of anyone who crosses them. I think the biggest thing the Blues need to do is improve their depth at forward. I think they brought in Derek Roy this year to be that second line center, and it just flamed out. He was a healthy scratch in the playoffs several times. I think you let him go. I think it's time for Patrick Berglund to move on. He's that big kid that's got the size and supposedly has the skill, and he's supposed to be a top two center, but he's just never turned into that. I think it's time to let him go. There's a few other guys. I think there's room for a Brendan Morrow or Steve Ott on that team. There's not room for two of them.
Yeah.
I think one of them stick around, and Ott was the throw in the Ryan Miller deal. And I think he's more expensive, so I'd prefer to let him go. If you're going to keep one of those two, let Ott go, keep Morrow. Although Max LaPierre plays kind of that same role too. There's, you know, you can only have so many grinders, and
especially expensive ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Because usually your third line is a bunch of guys, or your fourth line is a bunch of grinders making $1 million.
Right, exactly. And I think LaPierre fits that fourth line role well.
Yep.
I think I would like to see, really, let Morrow and Ott both go. Let Roy go. Let Berglund go. You know, if you have that first line of Steen, Oshie, Backes, the SOB line, and then you have a second line with Tarasenko and Schwartz on the wings, get a legit second line center between them, build a third line around Vladimir Sobotka, who is a great penalty killer, great faceoff guy, But he was getting second line minutes with Tarasenko and Schwartz, and he's not that kind of offensive player. He's a defensive third line kind of guy, but he's the perfect third line center. So I think, yeah, you find a second line center who's legit, you get a couple of third line wingers to put around Saboka, and they may already be in the system. You may have guys like a Dmitry Yaskin, who's in Chicago with the Wolves right now. He may come up next year. I think it's there's some dead weight that needs to be cut, but for the most part, I don't want to blow it up. I think it bring Hitchcock back, keep most of the same guys, but move some of the supporting cast around. And the biggest thing is figure out what they want to do in goal. I think
that was going to be my next question. You bringing Miller back, or are you going back to Elliott?
See, I think Elliott's days are done. I don't think he's going to be brought back. I think a couple years ago when Halak was hurt down the stretch, they kind of gave Elliott the ball and let him run with it, and he played great in the regular season, and then the playoffs hit, and he flamed out. And I think at this point, they're not going to hitch their wagon to that horse again. I think it's time to bring Jake Allen up from the AHL.
Yeah, and I think he's coming.
He was the AHL goaltender of the year this year. The question is he coming up as a 1B or a 2, or are they going to actually ride him as the top goalie and then bring in a veteran along the lines of a Brian Elliott as the number 2? Yeah. But I think, really, the X factor is what does Miller want? I think they would have him back despite how poorly it went at the end of this season. There's a lot of extenuating circumstances. The Blues did not play well, a lot of injuries, adjusting and moving midseason and stuff for a guy that's spent his whole career in one place. You know, if you give him a whole offseason and training camp to where he really feels like he's part of the team and he's settled in St. Louis, I have no doubt that he would be better. I don't know that he's going to be the absolute elite backstop that they brought him in to be, especially given what they paid to get him. But I think you can only bring him back at the right price.
Yeah,
I think
and what does he want? Does he want 3 years, $18 million, six a year, or does he want 6 years at $6 million per?
Right. And you know, I would say the absolute most I would pay him is $6 million a year. More like $5 million would be ideal.
Because like, but what did Jimmy Howard got? 5.3 and Bobrovsky got around 5.3.
Yeah, that
I
seems
believe.
To be the going rate for guys that are maybe not in that top five. They're not in that Tuukka Rask echelon.
Yep.
But they're that next level down. And I would think, you know, if he wants 4 years at $5 million a year, sure, I'll bring him back at that. If he wants 6 years at $6 million a year, let Minnesota have him, because you know they're going to be in line for his services. They wanted him at the deadline. They
when
just didn't want to pay.
When does Minnesota run out of cap money? Because supposedly Vanek's going to go there too.
Well, see, the thing is, they're going to end up in that Pittsburgh mode where they're going to be very top-heavy. They're going to have those 4, 5, 6 elite players, and the rest of their team's going to be $1-2 million guys.
Yep.
But the thing with them, too, is keep in mind the cap's probably going to go way up because of the Canadian TV deal. So if the cap goes up $10 million a year starting next season, that opens up a lot of space for teams like that to still add another piece or two. But I don't know. If I had to put money on it, I'd guess Miller will not be back, and Jake Allen will be the number one with a veteran as the number two. But that's not necessarily because the Blues don't want him. I just think he may end up being too rich for their taste. The Blues spent to the cap this year, and they very well may do it again next year because I think they realize there's only so big of a window with this core of players they're building around. But I just don't see them spending the money it's going to take to keep Miller, because I think there's going to be a Minnesota or someone else who's desperate for an elite goaltender, and they're just going to throw crazy money at him. And, you know, no fault to him. If somebody's offering me $7 million a year and the Blues are offering me $5 million a year, I'm taking the $7 million a year.
That's hockey. That's business.
You know,
that's just life.
At his age, he's 33 years old. This is the last big contract he's going to get. So milk it for all it's worth. And if Minnesota's offering him big money, then off to Minnesota he goes.
Skating down memory lane.
The who segment?
This is the ode to the Johnny Kells segment.
The bandwagon jumper extraordinaire.
Yep.
So I
jumped off that bandwagon and I ran him over with the bus.
I chose this one because a few weeks ago, former Iceman forward Brian Bisek and his wife Allie welcomed into the world their first child, a boy named Benjamin James.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Or as Allie's calling him, Benny Boo.
Ooh.
Yeah. We'll just call him Benjamin.
Yeah.
The date was January 12, 2011. This was during our first season in the CHL. It was the date of the 2011 CHL All-Star Game played in Rapid City, South Dakota. The All-Stars beat the host Rush 11-6. In that game, Brian Bicek was our only representative. He made the Iceman proud, though. He had a four-point night, 3 goals and 1 assist, and was +4. And his 3 goals came in the form of a natural hat trick, with the 3rd goal being the game winner for the All-Star team. But he was...
No, that's not even possible. Natural hat trick means you score the first 3 goals of the game.
A natural hat trick means you score 3 goals in a row with no one else scoring.
No, first 3 of the game.
No, with no one else it's scoring. Any 3 in a row as long as no one scores in between.
I'll call Don Cherry. We'll solve this
one. We'll look it up. So anyway, he scored the game winner but was not the MVP because another player had an even better game. And that other player would go on to become an Iceman player himself. The MVP of that game was none other than...
Jason Dale!
Who then played for the Bloomington Prairie Thunder. He led all players with 7 points in the All-Star game, 2 goals and 5 assists, and was +7, which that doesn't happen very often in any realm, even in All-Star games. +7, his 5 assists also tied the CHL All-Star game record for assists, and he did it all despite being the youngest player in that game. He was only 22 then, so... Couple of Icemen, one who was an Iceman at the time and one who went on to become an Iceman player, shining in the CHL All-Star game back in 2011.
And he's moving on to the 2nd round of the playoffs.
And yeah, yeah indeed.
Brian Patafi, tweet of the week.
Iceman fans can follow Brian Patafi on Twitter. His handle is bpatafi, B-P-A-T-A-F-I-E. This is a typical Brian Patafi tweet. Quote, out for seafood and asked the waitress if she had frog legs. She said, yes, so I told her to hop into the kitchen and get me a cheeseburger.
How recent was this?
There's a hint of sexism in that joke, too, but...
How recent was this?
It's been within the last week or so.
I've heard this so many times on the bus, like going back to November.
So it's one of those dusty old jokes that
he tells all the time. Been running out of material.
Yeah.
For Twitter.
Dusting off the archives.
Yeesh.
Also, worth mentioning before we get to the next segment... Hell is freezing over. Brian Patafi is now on Facebook.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah. For the longest time, he swore he was not going to do Facebook. He was only a Twitter guy, but he is now on Facebook.
Nice. Hockey 101.
Helping Iceman fans, new and old alike, understand the game a little bit better. We're not going to do any new topics this week. Just a follow-up to the last show. Again,
you're a jerk.
I looked something up to prove that you're wrong, and it happened again. In the Hockey 101 last time, I contended that you did not always get a point for an overtime loss. You vehemently disagreed.
Yep.
And it turns out you were wrong. I was right. An overtime loss was indeed worth 0 points, not just for a short term. It was that way for... 8 decades.
What?
You were wrong. For 8 decades. From the NHL's inception, the 1917-18 season through 1998-99, the standings consisted of win-loss tie. 2 points for a win, one point for a tie, no points for an overtime loss.
Wait, what?
If there was a decision...
Because there was no overtime.
Yeah, they played overtime.
No, they didn't.
Not way back in 1917, but they played overtime.
Not in the 70s and not in the 80s.
Yeah, they played a 5-minute overtime.
No. That wasn't until the 90s. You are such a child of Bettman. I am calling you Bettman's son from now on. That wasn't until the 90s that they went to overtime.
But when they did, there was overtime, and if you lost, you didn't get a point.
Yeah, well, you need to find when that happened.
When they started playing overtime?
Yes, because it wasn't for 8 decades. Wow. But this is what happens when I don't do my own research.
Let me
get lied to by the researcher.
Let me ask you this, though. In 1918, was there a point for an overtime loss?
There wasn't an overtime loss.
No, I'm just asking. Was there a point for an overtime loss?
It didn't exist.
Was there a point for an overtime loss?
You can't answer that question. No, and then there wasn't a point for an overtime loss in 1987 either because they were still using the old system.
So you're saying they didn't play overtime. If it was tied at the end of regulation, there was no overtime.
Yeah, that's the way it was.
What's the over-under on the year that overtime began in the regular season?
Let's say 1992 plus or minus 2.
Okay, interesting. I'll look that up and try to find out when exactly overtime did exist. But the point is, whenever they did start playing overtime, until the 98-99 season, if you lost in it, you didn't get a point. In 99-2000, that was when the OTL column was added to the standings. From then until 2003-2004, it was win-loss tie, overtime loss. You got 2 points for a win, one for a tie or overtime loss. And then if the game was still tied at the end of overtime, it was just over, and you got the tie. And then we had the lockout in 2004-2005, and that's when they adopted the shootout, which had been used in the minors since the 80s. And that eliminated ties altogether. So from 2005-2006 to present, that's what we've had, the win-loss, overtime loss. There's no tie column anymore. You get a point for an overtime or shootout loss, and they're all just thrown into a single column, the OTL column in the standings.
Yeah, this is just a bunch of worthless stuff. Don't even listen to them, people. Just do your own research. Take like 2 minutes. Google, when did overtime begin?
When did
NHL
overtime begin?
It's not that difficult to do.
So what you're saying is, and I'll concede this, what you're saying is you weren't wrong for 8 decades. You were just wrong for several years.
Yes, you were wrong for 8 decades.
No, I'm not wrong.
I said that there was always a point for a tie.
You said there was always a point for a tie, which was correct.
Yes.
And then you said there was always a point for the overtime loss, which is not true.
I did not say both of those things. You can cut that clip out and email it to me. So there is always a point for a tie.
We'll ask the 6 people who listen to the
dangling tangent.
All right. Tim Hortons recently announced that it will soon expand its presence in the U.S., including a bunch of new locations in St. Louis and Fort Wayne.
Wow, they're getting closer.
Two closer cities.
That's where
to
I
Evansville.
Took Ivy for her birthday on Saturday.
Really?
Tim Hortons.
In Wheeling?
Yep.
So
it's also where we stopped on Sunday before we left.
So other than Timmy's, because I know that would be your first answer, other than Timmy's, what restaurant chains from elsewhere do you really wish we had here in Evansville?
I don't like restaurant chains.
Really?
I would like to have a
bunch of local
proprietor kind of some greasy spoons and some other nicer places.
This is Evansville. We got a lot of greasy spoons.
But JoJo's on 41 before it closed down was my favorite place to go. Just great atmosphere, everything else. Great menu. You could get anything, anytime, day or night, serve drinks. That place was awesome.
It was like Denny's, only better.
It had nothing to do with Denny's.
Well, I mean,
it was awesome.
Because it was open 24 hours and you could get breakfast anytime. But
so, no, I'm not a chain guy.
I like JoJo's too. That was always a good one.
I go to the Gerst House. I go to Edgewater in Newburgh. That's where I eat. So
you like the local places.
Yep.
See, I like local places too. There's a lot of places here that I really do enjoy, but you go to other cities and you go to different places too, and you fall in love with stuff that you just wish we had here. I love Lion's Choice in St. Louis. Is a great roast beef place. It's a roast beef chain that's only in St. Louis, but it's the best roast beef I've ever had. I always like Fuddruckers. You ever been to Fuddruckers?
Yep. We had one in Detroit.
Really good burgers. Love Fuddruckers. I wish we had a Waffle House here. They're close. They're over in Louisville. They're in Indy, but there's, for whatever reason, there's just none here.
You like Waffle House more than Steak and Shake? I do go to Steak and Shake.
See, I grew up with Steak and Shake in Indy. You can't swing a dead cat in Indy without hitting a Steak and Shake. So Steak and Shake's no big. I mean, I like it.
Are you saying that Steak and Shake uses dead cats that are thrown at it?
Yes. Yes, you heard that
gross.
Correctly. I like
Steak
and
Shake. I'm sure you'll research this and prove that I'm wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Next week.
Search Google dead cat Steak and Shake. But I like Steak and Shake, but I don't really compare that to Waffle House. And Waffle House, I just love Waffle House because their waffles are really good. And
I do know a chain
places.
I wish was here. And I'm making plans to go and eat there and feed all of my nephews and nieces this coming weekend. Bojangles.
Bojangles.
We're heading down to Georgia, and I already told my brother to clip some coupons for me because I'm feeding the family Bojangles.
Isn't there a Bojangles in Owensboro?
I don't know.
I want to say there's one in Owensboro down by the mall.
I know that South Carolina has Bojangles in the arena.
Really?
Yes.
That's pretty cool. You know what else is big down south? Whataburger. You ever eat at Whataburger?
No, never even heard of it. I've never eaten at Bojangles, but I sure
you want to go?
Yeah, this week.
I've only been to Whataburger twice, but I really like it. It was really good burgers. But my favorite thing is half of their menu items are what a whatever. So the burger is what a burger, and the chicken is what a chick, and the fish sandwich is what a catch. This nice. Clever naming, but
clever.
Also big down south is Crystal, which is basically yes. the southern version of White Castle, yep. which I really like them. What about In-N-Out Burger? You ever been to In-N-Out Burger?
Yep, we used to have one in central Michigan.
Really?
Mount Pleasant, Michigan.
Is yep. it good?
It's just
I've always heard great things, but I've never been
just
to
like
one.
A White Castle and everything else.
I know every time like a new restaurant opens in Evansville, people mention In-N-Out Burger as something we should have here. People always mention Jack in the Box, too. I'm not a fan. I've eaten at Jack in the Box in Nashville and St. Louis, and I just think it's
I
really
ate there
overrated.
Once in Nashville because I grew up with them in Detroit way back in the 70s, back when a tie was a tie, and you got 1 point for it. So,
what about Big Boy?
Yep, all over Michigan, grew up.
Yeah.
That was like when you were 16, that was the fancy place you took your girlfriend on a date.
Yeah, hey, baby, you want to go yeah. to the Big Boy?
You didn't go to Burger King or McDonald's. You took her to Big Boy, and that
yeah.
was...
You ordered, big spender.
Yeah, you ordered off of a menu, so it was kind of like serious. That was like, for the younger audience out there, that was kind of like putting that you're in a relationship on Facebook.
Yeah, it was Big Boy official.
Yes, it was Big Boy official.
We went to Big Boy... we were over in Cincinnati last month, and there was a Big Boy like right down the street from our hotel. And we decided to go there when we were on the way out of town for breakfast, and they were doing this Sunday brunch buffet thing. Oh, my God. It's the greatest buffet I think I've ever had.
I think I had that buffet back in the 80s.
They had every conceivable breakfast item, from eggs to French toast to waffles to pancakes. And unlimited bacon, which any place that has bacon on a buffet is cool by me. But, man, now I'm hungry. Think we should get out of here?
Yep. Final thoughts.
Next show, 2 weeks, May 14th, tentatively at least. But that's our plan right now, is it'll be May 14th. So,
and I'm hoping to get a couple of amusement parks fired up, too. Now that I know all these broadcasters around the ECHL, I'm hoping to get some interviews with them. In
really?
Regards to the first round of the playoffs.
Very yep. cool. So so we don't know. We should mention, we don't know if this episode's going to be on the air or not, right?
No, we don't know yet. So
as of when we're recording this, yep. this may be a podcast-exclusive episode, or it may have aired on WYIR.
Yep.
That's for you to know and us to find out.
Exactly. Do we have any words from Ivy Insights?
No.
How was the Wheeling-Naylor game?
Good.
Who did you root for in the Wheeling-Naylor game?
South Carolina.
How about that Alan York?
No.
No. Oh, she's turned on him.
There we go.
I want to know, before we finish, Ivy, are you enjoying your pink flamingo?
Yes.
Awesome.
He is Michael Shockley, senior writer. Oh, we didn't even have
sorry.
To.
What was that?
I was just like, wait, we didn't do the 24/7 Iceman Maniacs, but we don't have any injuries.
Yeah, there's no
we don't
injury
have a team.
Transaction report, right. The transaction report is minus Jeff Pyle.
Yeah, that's true. He is Michael Shockley, the senior writer. Web master. He is Michael Shockley,
how much you been drinking?
Senior writer, webmaster, vice president of Offbeat Shenanigans for IcemanManiacs.com for all of your information on your beloved Evansville Iceman, including breaking news over the summer that I will leak, not me, but I will leak to Michael Shockley. You can go to IcemanManiacs.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
We'll see you on the radio or the internet. Maybe the radio or the internet.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.